And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is all business. Each of my guests is discussing his expertise in a business topic. My next guest is a former mega firm attorney and SEC attorney turned creativity consultant. He'll explain how to turn fear and doubt into fuel for brilliance from his book, Uncertainty. And if you have a question or if you just want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Jonathan Fields is an author, an entrepreneur, a speaker on a mission to help individuals and organizations embrace action in the face of uncertainty with a greater sense of ease. A former New York City mega firm attorney turned social entrepreneur, Fields formed two cutting-edge boutique lifestyle fitness facilities, Sedona Private Fitness and Sonic Yoga, the latter in the shadow of 9/11 in Hell's Kitchen, New York. He eventually sold both companies to focus on writing, training, and speaking, and he's being a strongly present dad and husband in his family as well. Now, as an author, an innovator, catalyst, and speaker, Jonathan writes for Ad Age Power 150 blog, jonathanfields.com, and he contributes to psychologytoday.com, Amex's Open Forum, and a number of the top 100 blogs as well. When he's not writing, Jonathan is either building something, or you can usually find him dancing around his living room with his wife and his daughter, or writing in the third person. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. How are you today?
That's great to be here.
Well, thank you for being our guest. Yes, it is great to be here. And I have to say, the best place to start with you is really to start with your own story, because it is a remarkable story. So tell us how you gave up a six-figure income as an attorney to open up your own yoga studio and signing the lease on September the 10th of 2001 in New York City.
Yeah, and you know, it was a couple of steps in the transition, but I was, I had a great job making a great living in a large law firm in Manhattan, but was getting increasingly unhappy because it just wasn't the right job for me, and in fact ended up at one point in the hospital with emergency surgery from the stress of the job. So it's a big wake-up call for me, and I went from there, and I kind of knew that I had a real deep interest in entrepreneurship and also in the health and wellness world. So I started saving up money and went from making six figures and wearing $2,000 suits to making $12 an hour, learning my next trade. And from there, I ended up actually building a personal training private center over about 2.5 years and built that to a nice presence and sold that. And then living in Hell's Kitchen, New York with a three-month-old baby and a wife and a home, signed the lease for a floor in a building that I hoped would become one of New York's premier yoga centers on September 10th, 2001. And woke up the next day to, what we all know is just a horrifying, horrifying time in New York City. From there, was wondering, two things. What am I doing? I'm trying to start a business in the middle of this incredible time in New York. And at the same time, anyone who's been a New Yorker for a while pretty much knew people that they lost that day. So it was a challenging time, a time of just incredible, incredible uncertainty and fear. But I pushed forward with that business and we ended up growing it into one of the premier centers in New York, and tremendous, tremendous experience going through that.
Well, without a doubt, and coming out of that experience is really the thesis for your whole book. How did you take action in the face of all of that uncertainty? I mean, you've got a young family. You've got just signed a lease on a building on September the 10th of 2001. A lot of variables there were up in the air. How did you push past all of that and turn the yoga studio into the success that it was?
Yeah, and there were a lot of things, but there was really one defining moment which happened right after, and that was we realized when sort of making a quick list of people that we might have known who worked in the towers that one of our friends, who was a dad, married two young boys, was actually there. So we went up to his wife's house, and we were standing vigil with her, and then as everyone sort of cleared out at the end of the day, the two moms went to put the nine-month-old to bed, and they asked me if I would go up and read the 2.5-year-old the story, and I got there and just sort of entered the room and seeing this young child, looking up at the, wondering where his dad was and knowing that, his dad went to work that way, not expecting never to come home, but that's in fact what happened. It flipped the switch in me, and it allowed me to reframe the scenario and say, this is scary, this is uneasy, but we have one shot, and there's so much opportunity and so much healing in the business that I was creating that needed to be had, that it really allowed me to push forward. And it didn't mean that I was not fearful or not anxious. It just gave me things that were more important and more powerful to focus on.
And that is an important distinction. My guest is Jonathan Fields, author of the book Uncertainty, Turning Fear and Doubt into Fuel for Brilliance. And some of the questions that leap to my mind, Jonathan, whenever I am embarking on a new project, and I'm sure this is in the minds of everybody, including you, you know, how do you overcome the questions? What if people think that I'm stupid? What if I get rejected? What if I'm wrong? What if I fail? I mean, these are all the negative thoughts that enter in your mind. How does a creative entrepreneur such as yourself use these thoughts to sort of fuel their progress?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no doubt that when you're doing something bold and something that a lot of people don't normally do or they don't understand, people will look at you and they'll wonder if you're frankly nuts. And you may wonder if you're nuts yourself at certain moments. But I found a really powerful tool is something called reframing. And reframing is essentially asking different questions to allow yourself to tell a different storyline. So, you know, for example, when I left my career as a law, the question that a lot of people at my level were asking was, how can you give up so much? You know, a law school, the career that everybody wants, you know, how can you just chuck it all? And I said to them, you know, you're actually asking the wrong question, because that question creates a storyline that says that, you know, it's just foolhardy and there's no justification for doing that. But if I ask the question and I frame it differently and I say, how could I conceivably justify limiting the next 40 to 50 working years of my life by what's happened in the last seven? It allows me to tell a different story. And what you discover is that it's not so much the circumstances that sort of fortify you against that fear of judgment and fear of failure, but it's the stories that you tell about the circumstances. If you can change the storyline in your head, it really is a very powerful tool.
Well, let's drill down on that for just one second more, if we can, Jonathan, because, yes, I understand negatively framing the question, how can I leave all of this behind, the big salary, the nice office, the suits, and all of that. However, if you reframe that in a more positive light, you still have to ask yourself, how will I, in this new yoga studio, this new fitness center, how will I really achieve the same lifestyle that I had using these new vehicles to get there? So how did you overcome that? How did you approach that question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a realist also. I'm not somebody who comes from the career world where I say do what you love and the money follows. I live in New York. I have a family to support, and that takes a fair amount of money.
Yes, it does.
So my approach is a certain amount of planning. You know, let me get really intelligent about what I'm trying to do and find as much data as I can about whether this can be successful and whether it's something that's really deeply meaningful to me. And at that point, and here's where I diverge, because I'm fairly risk tolerant on a level that a lot of people aren't. The way that most people will make this step is instead of launching headlong into that next thing, what they'll do is they'll slowly leg into it. They'll cut the TV time that, and the average American spends between 2 and 6 hours a day, depending on the survey, watching TV. So what they'll do is they'll reallocate some of that time, and they'll start to work on this thing that they really want to do on the side. And over time, what starts to happen is all the assumptions and the hunches become replaced by actions and information. And as that happens, it either confirms that what you're doing has legs and you should keep doing it, or it tells you you need to change what you're doing. And what generally happens is people will grow this over time. And then, you know, one of the things that you brought up is, well, still, how do you handle the fear of judgment around that?
Right.
And a lot of it also is about having conversations with those who are closest to you. I'm also not somebody who buys into the sort of pop psychology thing that says jettison everyone from your life who doesn't immediately buy into your, you know, your crazy dream. I don't want to do that. I love my friends. I love my family. I love my wife. And I want them and need them to be there. So it was a matter of instead sitting down, doing some really serious research, getting in touch with why I was doing it, and then having conversations with those people who I wanted to rally to be on my team as if I were, you know, pitching a venture capitalist for the project of my life, and being really intelligent and articulate and listening to them as well.
All right. That's very good advice. My guest is Jonathan Fields, author of the book Uncertainty. Jonathan, your life story, very compelling. A lot of good seeds of information there. You also researched other people's to add to the book as well. Besides your own story, what other examples stand out in your mind of either artists or entrepreneurs or visionaries that you examined?
I had the great opportunity to actually talk with a wide range of people, from best-selling authors to, you know, chief innovation officers at large public companies. And one of the really most interesting stories is a guy named Randy Commissar in Silicon Valley, who was at one point the CEO of LucasArts, big entertainment company. And he found himself getting more and more successful along a path that left him more and more empty. And he literally, what he describes is just jumped out of a perfectly good airplane and just created a complete new path in Silicon Valley that essentially led him to create a role that didn't exist called virtual CEO, where he kind of rode shotgun as a shadow CEO with new companies. That led to a best-selling book, which then led to a role as a professor at Stanford University and his current incarnation as a venture capitalist. And what he says is, all of these things were completely unplanned. There was no roadmap for any of this. And until he started to really trust the fact that stepping into that place of uncertainty was somewhat terrifying, but at the same time, the other side of it was opportunity that kept bottled, until he actually went to that place, he never would have accessed that entire career path and sort of lived this life that's just been incredible for him.
That is an interesting story. My guest is Jonathan Field. Jonathan, in your book, you've got lots of ideas for individuals and for corporations to sort of embrace the doubt, embrace the fear, and to move forward with it. And you have something in your book that I'd never read before. It's a term called creation hives. What are creation hives, and why should we have them?
Sure. So a creation hive is basically, it's a collection of people who are striving on a similar mission with a similar mindset to create a particular creative outcome. And I spent some time studying what's become a really popular model in the tech entrepreneurship world called seed accelerators. And some people may know them as Techstars or Y Combinator, where they literally bring teams of founders in for an intensive 12-week mentoring program. And you have, a dozen teams of maybe three people, each trying to create their own companies, their own platforms, literally in 12 weeks, the end of which they present to a team of angel investors. And what's fascinating is that doing so changed the dynamic. And we were talking about judgment earlier. Mm-hmm. One of the really powerful things is it changed the judgment dynamic so that everybody there knew that on a weekly basis they were going to be held accountable for their actions, for their progress, for their decisions. Nothing would be held back. And also that it wasn't a zero-sum game. Everybody there was there to help everybody else survive and thrive and get funded and succeed. So just because one person succeeded didn't mean another would fail. And what we found is that this really changed the dynamic in a profound way from what people experience in the outside world, where it's generally perceived as a zero-sum game. And people are constantly trying to dismantle you or shoot you down because they don't want you to get that apple that they're striving for. And it really changed the psychology of the creative process in a way that allowed many of the teams to thrive and create progress on a level that we rarely see outside of that type of environment.
All right. Now, you've talked a lot about collaboration. You're collaborating with your friends, talking about these seed accelerators and the collaboration that goes on there. Let me ask you this, Jonathan. In what ways can we tap into social technology to enhance the creative process?
That's a great question. One of the things that I also found was that the vast majority of people really don't have access to this type of in-person environment. But what a lot of people are starting to do is they're leveling the playing field, and they're reaching beyond their local environment by using social media to find these like-minded people around the world and literally just get them together so that they would, they'd start to search on topics or ideas that like-minded people would search for and create groups of people, their own sort of virtual creation hubs. One great example is a person I interviewed who is a furniture maker in a small town in middle America. And he was just really trying to find this group of like-minded people, but in his small town, he couldn't find those people. So he went onto Twitter and started to talk with a lot of different people and ended up finding a group of furniture makers from around the world who were passionate about the craft and who also wanted to really build successful businesses. And he started this weekly chat and then even a private community that grew out of that. So he literally was able to find people from around the world, starting in social media, and turn them into his own virtual creation hive.
Wow, that is great. And that is a great example of how to use social media to do that. One last thing that I wanted to ask you, because you have a term in there that I liked, ride the butterflies. So how do we ride the butterflies rather than let the butterflies get the better of us when uncertainty arises?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest misnomers, is that people who are these world-class creators or they succeed in different fields, they just don't feel the butterflies, and they don't feel the anxiety or the fear. And the truth is, after interviewing so many of these, they do feel them. And in fact, we all feel them, but they learn to translate them differently. They translate them as signposts that what they're doing matters, rather than signposts that, you know, that essentially shut them down or paralyze them. And, you know, some of these things that we've talked about today, creating creation hives, setting up mentors and creating people that are on your team, can work really effectively. Some of the other things I talk about in the book are things as basic as committing to a daily exercise and mindfulness routine, which can really profoundly change the psychology of taking action in the face of uncertainty.
Oh, that is great. My guest has been Jonathan Fields, author of the book Uncertainty, Turning Fear and Doubt into Fuel for Brilliance. Jonathan, if people like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, maybe learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Sure. They can just go to theuncertaintybook.com.
Theuncertaintybook.com. Jonathan, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks for having
me
on.
Thank you. Take care.